All right, good morning, golfers. Welcome to On Par with Anthony Scorsia, Long Island's only golf talk radio show. Thank you for joining me on Saturday, September 16th, 2017. Pleased to be joined by my buddy, Steve Goldman. How you doing, Steve?
I'm doing great, Anthony. We're getting to the business end of the FedEx Cup playoffs. We've got 36 holes left at the BMW, and, you know, the story this week, Jason Day, well, they say it's mutual. I'm going to say he fires his caddy. Basically his mentor. I mean, even though Colin Swatton says he certainly took the high road this week and said all the right things, but I guess it is the caddy's fault, because Jason Day shoots 64, 65 and aces 17 yesterday, and he's
and just, a brand new car to boot,
right? And he's just, and he's three shots back of his countryman Mark Leishman, both President Cuppers. So the United States walking all over the President's Cup might not necessarily be a foregone conclusion.
It might not be, but the way the U.S. Took care of business in the Walker Cup, and we're looking forward to talking to Brad Faxon,
absolutely,
who, Fox analyst, who was there to document it, if you will.
Well, we said last week, right at the end of the show, we didn't really go as far as to say that, to paraphrase Charles Barkley, I don't know who GBNI is, but GBNI is in trouble.
Right.
But, we sort of knew that this was a possibility because of just the absolute stacked United States lineup, and looking forward to getting into it with Brad to talk about. These guys can just walk onto the PGA Tour, and you would think that they've been there forever.
Well, I mean, Thornberry finished fourth in a PGA Tour event, so that's all the evidence you need.
Absolutely.
But let's I look forward to talking to Brad Faxon, but let's get to our first break. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
The Long Island Golf Association is a nonprofit organization of 81 private and public clubs. The LIGA conducts 15 championships annually and works closely with the Long Island Caddy Scholarship Fund. The scholarships are granted to young men and women who are employed at member clubs. For more information on how you can participate in a championship, or if you'd like to donate your time as a volunteer, please call the LIGA at 516-746-1015. That's 516-746-1015. 1015, or visit us at www.longislandgolf.org.
Play like a pro with a custom set of PXG clubs in your bag. Designed to deliver unrivaled performance and fitted to optimize your game, PXG clubs will help you unlock your true potential. We guarantee you've never played like this before. Get fitted for PXG clubs at Pete's Golf Shop today.
Welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. I'm Anthony. He's Steve. And on the line is Fox analyst Brad Faxon. Brad, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing great. I just want to start with, obviously, you guys had a bit of a weather event and recent events. I just wanted to make sure that you and the family and your property, how'd you guys do down there? You guys okay?
Well, yes. I can't say for the rest of Florida, but the East Coast, where I live on Palm Beach Gardens, Jupiter, Juneau Beach area, where a lot of the PGA Tour players live, got spared the brunt of the storm. And, we'd love to say our thoughts and prayers are with everybody, especially down in the Keys, Miami. I think the West Coast got whacked a lot more than us, but
yeah.
It's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's pretty devastating. Some of the, some of the reports from around the world, from around that area and the islands, it's just, it's heartbreaking, really.
It really is, and in the wake of what happened in Houston and then here, Mother Nature can
show you who's boss.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, just wanted to, make sure that everything was good. I wanted, want to get right to the Walker Cup. I mean, you were there, you played in the Walker Cup in 83, you know what it's like. But let's just start with the sheer talent that was on display. We'll just start talking from a 30,000 foot perspective. It's just the sheer talent to me. I can't remember anything like it. It's just so impressive.
Well, if you're talking about the American team this year, for those of you who don't really know the Walker Cup team, it's played every 2 years between the U.S., and Great Britain, and Ireland. And last year, two years ago, the U.S. got, they got their butts kicked. And this year, I mean, they had on paper the stronger team by a mile. And, led by Maverick McNeely. God, there were so many guys that were. Colin Morikawa, he played unbelievably well. Doug Gim,
yep.
Like you said, Thornberry. These guys came out, and if you walked on a driving range and watched them hit balls, they look just like the tour players.
Yeah, it was just, to me, I mean, just the sheer talent. Like you said, they look like tour players. They act like tour players. They think like tour players. The way they get around the golf course, you know, I would assume the talent level has been trending in this way. But to me, it just seemed like I'd never seen so many players that could really make the transition. Even ironically enough, when we look at all, let's say, 19 of the guys between GB and I and the U.S. minus Stuart Hagerstad, only a handful of them are really going to be, let's say, constant names on the PGA Tour. I find that to be even more stunning, to be honest.
No, you're exactly right. And I mean, it's hard to tell out of the 20 players there how many of them will be extremely successful PGA Tour players. But if you were to look at players that have been ranked in the top 10 in the World Amateur Golf Rankings and what they do going on, a lot of those players have very successful careers. And, you know, you could look at Tiger Woods, Ricky Fowler, Justin Thomas as some of those recent players that played Walker Cup and then went on to having extremely successful PGA Tour careers.
Well, Brad, I was going to mention about Justin Thomas because it was only 4 years ago when the Walker Cup was here on Long Island at National Golf Links, Justin Thomas was on that team. So, granted, we're not saying that 4 years from now one of these guys is going to be a major champion, but it's also not out of the realm of possibility either because of players. I mean, I'm thinking about a guy like Norman Xiong, that's X-I-O-N-G. He goes 3-0-1, and he's only 19 years old, and he's had a phenomenal summer.
Incredibly talented player. I think he's going to be a sophomore at the University of Oregon and another one of those players that has a complete game. If you watched him, the way he swings, his ball flight, he was sharp around the greens. And, you know, I think you could, you know, walk up and down driving ranges on the PGA Tour or at the Walker Cup and, like I said, not be able to tell who the best player is. But these guys, the way they're composed, how they handle themselves, that was as impressive as any part of it. And, you know, you got to give credit to all the different junior golf associations and how the players, they play at events like they've traveled their entire lives. And so many of the players, especially from Great Britain and Ireland, they travel all over Europe, all over Australia, some of them to South America to go play. So when they get out on the PGA Tour, it's like nothing is new.
We're talking to PGA Tour pro and Fox analyst Brad Faxon. I was wondering because 2 weeks prior to the Walker Cup was the U.S. Amateur, and you were there also, and it was also right pretty much next door. It was at Riviera Country Club, and there were so many players on the American team and also on the GB and I team that had great U.S. Amateurs, and especially I'm thinking about Doug Gim and Doc Redman, although Doc Redman went 0-3 at the Walker Cup. But I'm wondering if playing that well in the same region of the country and then coming back 2 weeks later, does that, you know, well, obviously we could see in hindsight it gave them an advantage, but I was wondering at the time, you know, just the level of confidence that they had going into the championship as to what kind of effect that had on them.
Well, certainly, you know, Doc Redman stole the U.S. Amateur title from Doug Gim with his, you know, eagle birdie finish on 17 and 18 at Riviera, which is almost impossible to do. And then, unfortunately, Doc Gim made a bogey or a double bogey on the extra playoff hole, the 10th. To lose. But Gim is one of those players I would put as one of the most polished players on the U.S. team that looks like he could be a professional. He's at the University of Texas. They have a strong team. And you know, both of those golf courses, Riviera and L.A. Country Club, are some of the best courses these players will ever play in their lives. And I don't mean that to be a gross overstatement, but George Thomas, the famous architect from the Golden Age, designed those two courses, Bel Air and a handful of others out in that area, and they're spectacular. And L.A. Country Club, in particular, shined because nobody'd seen that course before. And the crowds out for the Walker Cup were much, much bigger than they were for the U.S. Amateur, and the players and the former Walker Cup participants participants that were at National in Long Island said they thought National had the biggest crowds they'd ever seen until they saw LA Country Club.
Now, you mentioned Riviera before, and I was wondering about your perspective as a tour pro, because obviously Riviera has been a traditional tour stop forever, back when they called it the LA Open and the Nissan Open, and then most recently used to be Northern Trust, now the Genesis. But that's always played in February, and now they had the US Amateur playing in August. And I'm wondering, from your perspective, how different that course plays in the summertime versus in the wintertime.
Yeah, that's a great question. The US Amateur, this past August, it was perfect conditions. It was completely dry. They use a type of grass that players never see in America. It's called Kikuyu, and it's the best fairway grass you could ever imagine to hit an iron shot off of. It's not fun to chip off or to chip, when you had to bounce the ball through it. And when the professionals play there in February, it's much cooler. It can be damp at times. The rough, the rough really there doesn't have to be high to be difficult with that grass. It's a really thick blade. But they play the course every bit as long as the tour players do for the U.S. Amateur. And they made the first hole at Riviera, which is typically a par 5 for the professionals, and a pretty generous par 5. It might be the most under par for any PGA Tour hole played all year. It's a par 5 that averaged 4.2 strokes per round for the Genesis, and they played it as a par 4. So these players are hitting maybe a 3-wood off the tee and a 4-5 iron into a hole, and then the second hole is a tough par 4. So they didn't make it easier on the Amateurs, that's for sure.
Brad, we want to jump back to LACC. Actually, I played a fair amount of golf in California, and we used to joke around, me and my friends, we used to call it Kikuyu because that's, that basically killed your score when you said, it's a very thick, hardy blade, and it's a difficult grass to get out of. But getting back to LA Country Club, the tide really turned in the second half of Saturday, and where even to the admission by the Walker Cup captain that they really had difficulty playing the back nine, finishing it off on Saturday afternoon. What was it about the back nine that you think made it so difficult for them? Because they seemed to struggle. That really was the sort of where we really put our necks out in front and never lost sight of the end goal. What was it about the back nine you think that the GB and I really struggled with?
That's a hard question for me to answer. The GB&I team typically dominates, if you look back in history, the foursomes matches, the alternate shot that really nobody plays or practices very often. And, the back nine starts off with a very short and generous par 4 tenth hole, and then a series of holes that are just incredibly difficult. And the 11th hole was a 280 to 290 yard par 3. Then you had a tricky blind tee shot on the 12th, and then some long par 4s and 5s. And, there's no way I could make something up that was going to make any sense and say why the U.S. did it. It's a marathon for these players playing this event. They got there a week before. They were there a Thursday before. They played the course every single day. They played with different pairings trying to figure out how it was going to go. I don't know if it was fatigue or it was just the fact that the U.S. team was so dominant and so strong, top to bottom. Top to bottom.
Yeah, one of the other things that I thought was interesting, too, was that the GB&I captain said in the aftermath that one of the things that the players from the GBI team learned from this week was that they have to be longer as players. And I just wonder how dangerous a proposition that can be, because length to me seems to be something sort of that you're born with. Sure, we can always get a little longer, but being long and being Scottie Scheffler long is not something that you can just take a pill or train to do. These guys are just naturally long. I think of like how many players tried to get longer on a tour. This comes to mind. Luke Donald was number one in the world at the time when he decided he needed to get longer and went into pretty much a funk until he could turn it around trying to get longer. Really, I was just wondering how dangerous a proposition you think that is when you say, I got to get longer.
Well, it's a hugely dangerous proposition, and I'll give you an example. I know you've had Ian Baker Finch on your on your show before I played with him the last couple of days, and he would have been an example. After he won the British Open in 91 at Birkdale, he went trying to hit it farther in order to become, quote-unquote, a better player when he's just beat the best players in the world. And, you know, that was a really surprising comment for me to hear. Like you said, Scheffler's a long hitter. Cameron Champ may be the longest hitter in golf, professional or amateur. He hits it past Dustin Johnson. And if some of these players try to go out, you know, their best player was a guy named Jack Singh Brar, who was 3-0 going into the final singles match, and he lost the decisive match to Stuart Hagestad. He's not the longest hitter, but that is a very hard thing to just go out and try and do without damaging other parts of your game. In order to hit the ball farther, you know, you got to make your swing longer. You probably have to turn more. You probably have to swing up on the ball more with your driver. You have to do a lot of different things than what you've been doing to gain, what, 5, 10, 15, 20 yards. Imagine if Jim Furyk had decided I was going to, you know, try and hit it as far as Dustin Johnson. That wouldn't work. And the other thing that you can take away is if you watch Jordan Spieth, who just played the last 2 days with, he played with Dustin and with Justin, you know, the two of the longer hitters in the game. Jordan's as competitive as those guys, and he's 20 to 25, sometimes more, yards behind.
Yep.
Well, speaking of Jack Singh Brar, one of the other aspects of L.A. Country Club that struck me was the bunkers, and more specifically, how difficult the players found trying to get out of the bunkers, and it even cost one of the GBI players his match because he was so frustrated he couldn't get his ball out that he actually slammed his club into the trap while his ball was still in it, and that, of course, is a loss of hole, and he ended up losing the match because of it. I'm wondering, well, I guess a two-part question. First of all, can you pinpoint why there was so much difficulty getting out of the sand? And following up, the USGA is coming back in 2023. Do you think that they might do something to make it, let's say, less penal?
My guess is they'll make it more penal.
Yeah, I guess I should have set you up for that one there.
I got a lot of responses to that question. And first of all, Paul Azinger, who works alongside me as one of the best analysts in the game, he made the comment that the sand at LA Country Club was very heavy sand, so the ball a lot of times would rest low enough so that it was almost at the equator of the ball, which means it's very difficult to control the spin on the ball out of the sand. And I think what PGA Tour players especially have become accustomed to is fantastic sand in the really control the spin. You can control the height of the ball and make it run or make it stop on a dime. And these bunkers that George Thomas originally designed were renovated recently by a great team. Gil Hanse is an architect who, if you follow the game of golf, everybody knows Hanse is one.
Sure. Another guest on Par with Anthony Scorsia, yep. By the way.
Yeah. And probably the most well-spoken and articulate man in the game. He's a historian and a great guy, and he just did some fantastic work at the Creek Club. If you follow him on
Instagram
or Twitter, you'll see some amazing, amazing pictures of the work there. But he worked with Jeff Shackelford, who's a writer for Golf World, another architect and historian on the game, especially on George Thomas, and their partner Jim Wagner. They did some work on those bunkers, and you could see a huge difference in the type of grass around the bunker. Was a blend of about four or five different fescues that was really thick, and your lies in the bunkers were difficult, not even. They were deep. The sand, like we said before, was thick or heavy. So it made, we saw very few good bunker shots from these players, or great bunker shots. And, you know, I'm watching some highlights as we speak of the players in Chicago at Conway Farms, and they're holding bunker shots out. They're stopping them. You know, it's a different type of sand that makes a big difference.
Yep. Yeah, and we know PGA Tour players like perfect conditions, you know, and they were those, not that the sand was imperfect, but it was, you know, traps are and bunkers are meant to be penal, and they were, that's for sure. We got to take a short break, but we'll be back. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit petesgolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
At Winfield United, we understand the challenges you face and the goals you have. We promise to do our best and to help you do yours. With the introduction of tools like the Geotech Insight platform and products like Droplex Extra, we are advancing the industry to new levels, allowing you to manage your time and budget more efficiently. Visit WinfieldUnitedPro.com to find a representative near you today. Winfield United, a proud sponsor of the Long Island Golf Course Superintendents Association.
Welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorcher. I'm Anthony. He's Steve, and on the line is Fox analyst and former PGA Tour player Brad Faxon. Brad, I want to talk about the CVS Charity Classic. It's it's one of the few charity classics that I actually, you know, look forward to hearing about and seeing. It's just amazing. It's one of the most impressive endeavors I think I've seen in terms of charity, in terms of the quality of what you do, what you do and who you help, and the players who respect you guys, you and Billy Andrade, so much that they're willing to, you know, take time out of their schedule. And it's not just a few players, it's a lot of players from the LPGA, the Champions Tour, and the PGA Tour. Talk a little bit about the CVS Charity Classic. It must be just, you know, I guess you could say it's a bit of a passion project for you.
Well, it sure is. You know, Billy and I, we both grew up in Rhode Island. I'm a few years older than Billy is, but you know, we had good amateur careers, good professional careers, and you know, we kept our roots in Rhode Island. And then, you know, CVS is one of the largest companies in the world, really a top 10, $100 billion company, and their CEO Larry Merlo is really on a mission to help all these different charities in Rhode Island. And if you look at the history of the event, it's raised over $20 million in these 20 years. We have now a field of men from the PGA Tour, the Champions Tour, we have LPGA Tour players and Hall of Fame LPGA Tour players, by the way. And it's really an event that's it's gone on for so long now. I think that's what's really helped us is, you know, I think it's hard to get some of the top players in the world to come to these events because they have so many choices right now. They make so much money, but I think the history of our event, the amount of publicity it's had as a big fundraiser, and you know, it's really the perfect storm. It's Rhode Island Country Club, where I grew up, is right on Narragansett Bay. CVS is a half an hour away in Rhode Island. All the money stay in the state, and we have 1,000 of volunteers. So it feels like everybody in Rhode Island is helping and involved in the event.
Brad, I'm also very curious specifically about your charity, the Andrade Faxon Charities for Children. I mean, it started way back in 1990, so, I mean, yes, it must be an immense sense of pride, but how does the Charities for Children help the, let's just say, the underprivileged children of Rhode Island?
Well, you know, Billy and I started an event for a school called the Meeting Street Center. It was a school for special needs, and it was an all-inclusive school. And we did one fundraiser back in the early 90s, and we were fortunate enough to have, being from New England, a huge circle of former athletes and celebrities that we just asked if they would come play. And we had a bunch of the businessmen in the state pay to play with these fun celebrities, and we had, you know, I mean, the list of celebrities we had play, you could name them. Kevin McHale played, Sandy Koufax played, Joe Pesci, Bill Murray, Bobby Orr. It would go on and on. Roger Clemens, Andy Pettit. We had, I mean, I'm doing it, Charles Barkley. I could keep going with the players that we had. And, you know, without even trying, we started raising $500,000-$700,000 in a day each year. And we won a great award called the Charles Bartlett Award for doing this, and we still, we don't hold the event every year anymore, but passionate about it. We still give money away every year to about 50 or 60 different Rhode Island-based charities for women and children. And, you know, I guess I'd brag about it because it's something that we still put a lot of effort and we have a lot of pride about it. But we didn't ever start it out trying to win awards to do it. But it got a lot of recognition, and it was probably the precursor to how the CVS Charity Classic actually started.
No, don't sell yourself short. I mean, we'll pat you on the back for you. So don't worry.
Need a second to congratulate you.
Don't worry about that. I know the grant application deadline was just a little short of 2 weeks ago, but like you said, you help out so many groups. I imagine just the decision making process, because you'd love to say yes to everybody. You'd love to give everybody as much money as they need. I imagine there's quite difficult decision making that has to go on in deciding where the grants actually go.
Well, it is. It's a huge process. We get over 100 applications that we go through, and we have to decide whether a charity might get, you know, $500 or $50,000. And you know, you feel like you can help out so many different charities, but you're feeling like you're leaving so many behind. In the state of Rhode Island, like many of the states now, government money's gone away. Funding is all from private raises. So it's a necessity, but we've become, you know, very closely associated with a lot of different charities, and you know, my wife still sits on the board of the Meeting Street Center, which is where Billy's brother went, and one of the greatest schools I've seen. So you care about it too, you know. And I don't know, I think we're lucky. The game of golf, it's like, if you want to raise money, no matter what kind of sport you play, you always have a golf tournament because everybody can play.
Yep. Well, Brad, I can't thank you enough for joining us this morning. I know it's sort of difficult dealing with some of the aftermath of Irma, but I really appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule this morning and coming on with us. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, you guys. Thanks. You're really good at this. I talked to Ian about your show, Baker Finch, and he said, oh, yeah, these guys know what they're talking about. And there's no place I've played like Long Island. You know, playing the Open at Bethpage, I've never seen such exciting and passionate fans. And
we'll see you.
Golf courses in the world.
So. We'll see you at Shinnecock next year.
You sure will. Can't wait.
Yep. Well, looking forward to it. Yep. And hopefully we'll get a round in while you're up here. That'd be fantastic.
That'd be a blast.
All right. Thanks, Brad. All right. That's Brad Faxon. We're going to take a short break and we'll wrap things up. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Play like a pro with a custom set of PXG clubs in your bag. Designed to deliver unrivaled performance and fitted to optimize your game, PXG clubs will help you unlock your true potential. We guarantee you've never played like this before. Get fitted for PXG clubs at Pete's Golf Shop today.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia, Long Island's only golf talk radio show. I'm Anthony. He's Steve. Steve, Brad's just very good. Obviously, there's a reason why he's a Fox analyst.
Yep.
Very articulate, very smart, a nice guy.
Is there a better expert on the short game than that guy?
No, there's definitely not. I mean, when he starts talking about, you know, bunker play and
putting
particularly.
You want to listen.
He's the E.F. Hutton of golf. I mean, maybe him and Crenshaw, I guess you could say, at this point when it comes to putting. But just a quality individual. You could see it through his charity work.
Absolutely.
Him and Billy, what they do, how they purport themselves, just tremendous individual.
There's two great stories that I found. One of them he mentioned on the air at the Walker Cup. So he's playing in the Walker Cup in 1983 in Liverpool, and he's on the first tee partnered with Willie Wood, another future accomplished PGA Tour professional, and they're playing in their foursomes match, and they agreed that Wood was going to tee off on the odd holes and Faxon on the even holes, except when they got to the first tee, Willie Wood has this panic attack that he can't swing the club. So now all of a sudden they got to switch it up. And somehow Brad said that he mustered up whatever it is he did to hit a decent drive down the middle. They end up winning their match 3-1. But, you know, it goes to show you that, you know, golf is not just golf. That,
yep.
You know, when, you know, first when you're playing with a partner, and second, when you're playing for your country, it's a different animal altogether.
Absolutely. And I know how Willie Wood felt You know, kind of felt like when I did my first radio show by myself. All right, folks. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Have a great week, everyone. We'll catch you back at the same time, same station next week.